Hello and welcome to another wonderful episode of Build It Better. I am your host, Jesse Tomshock, a software architect at ThisDot. And with me, as always, is my partner and cohort in crime, Adam Barrett.
Hey, everybody. Senior
software. I wasn't done.
Sorry. Keep going.
No.
It sounds great when you say
Senior software developer.
I'm a soup and sandwich developer at Big AB. Wait, no. My thing's Big AB at techhub.social.
To see how well it just rolls off the tongue like that?
Just rolls off the tongue.
Techhub.social. Jesse at cogwheel.social. We are all in on Mastodon and out of the bird dumpster fire.
Yeah, I'm still in the bird dumpster fire if you want to go to Adam L. Barrett. But I want to get off it before it sinks. I'm just trying to time it right. I'm waiting for that moment, you know, right as the ship's going down and you're hanging onto the bars and you're like, okay, swim. You know,
don't leave me, Jack.
That's the one. What was the woman's name? I wanted to say her name just there, but I couldn't.
Eileen? Evelyn?
No. Swim.
Shirt. Claire?
No, right.
I don't know. We're...
If you know, tell us in the comments what the character's name is in Titanic, who's not Jack and not Billy Zane.
I really don't know.
What are we talking about today on Build It Better?
Today, you are going to explain hexagonal architecture.
Hexagonal architecture. Oh yeah, that's the stuff. That's
now I'm coming in a little bit jaded. As much as I enjoy shaped based architecture, I feel like this is a needless process and diagramming for the sake of diagramming.
Oh no. Okay. Yes.
So.
But no. So here's the thing about a hexagonal architecture. Okay. So I didn't prepare very well. So I'm kind of going off the hip here. But I do know a lot about the subject, so we can move in with this. So hexagonal architecture is kind of an interesting thing. So it's an abstract architecture, meaning you're supposed to apply it to different software projects sort of thing. And obviously it's got an old rooting, but the thing about a hexagonal architecture that I think it makes it very interesting, probably the most interesting of the architectures to me is, and I have to start with a different architecture to actually get into it.
We're going to take the long way around.
We're going to take the long way in.
Okay.
So layered architecture, which is basically, you know, N layered or N tiered, depending on which way you're thinking about it, often happens when people aren't architecting. It's one of those things, you know, I don't know, we talked about emergent architecture, but people just, as they try and like simplify things and decouple things and untangle things, they'll find themselves going, oh, well, we should have three separate layers. And you can see all this happens everywhere and all sorts of different software things and all whatever. And it generally ends up falling into, you know, there's this like presenter view, this like thing that is the app logic. And then this thing that's like, oh, you know, often your database or your storage, your persistence. And they'll separate these three layers and they'll be like, okay, well, you know, somebody at some point will start to quantify this and they'll be like, okay, we're going to have rules. And the rules are the UI layer can only talk to the logic layer, and the logic layer is the only thing that you can't access the database directly or whatever it is, file system, whatever your persistence is. And then they kind of have these layers, and sometimes they'll get more and more layers. That's why it's like, it's not three layer architecture. It's
N layer. Suspiciously N-tier. Like just MVC.
Exactly. No, MVC, MVP, MV star, all these things.
MVVVC.
It's all variants on the abstract architecture that is just layers, right? And those three in particular spawn all that, and then some people will add layers in between or add, you know, that's layered architecture. And the thing about layered architecture is it happens all over the place, and like it's hard to find like where did that come from, because it came from like seven different places at once.
Just like a natural organic sort of separation of
exactly
my new technology stack is micro layers.
Nice. I like it. We can make that work.
Micro layers.
So hexagonal architecture is very similar, and so basically I believe hexagonal architecture is the thing that kind of becomes emergent after you've sort of been dealing in layers for a while. And then you start to want, you know, stronger cohesion in certain places and decoupling in other places. And you start to realize like somebody starts to think like, I need a pattern that we can follow. I need some structure. I need code structure that'll help us like know where to put things that will like speed us up and not slow us down, that makes sense and is easy to make decisions about. And then you start to get what I'm going to say is hexagonal architecture or the onion architecture. Some might include the clean architecture. Some might include there's like three more.
I like the onion version of.
Yep. Well, this is the thing.
An onion has layers.
It is, but the onion architecture and the hexagonal
architecture. Like a cake. Everybody loves cake. No, like an onion.
Are often conflated with each other because they're very close to the same thing. And there's a lot of overlap. And same with the clean architecture, though I would argue that the clean architecture is entirely different. But some people will, you know, if you Google hexagonal architecture, you'll often run into clean architecture things. I think mostly because of the way the shapes and the layers go inward, but that's a whole different thing.
I'm sorry, does clean architecture have its own shape?
Well, it's the circles. I don't know if you've seen the diagrams for it, but like, they generally have like a bunch of different.
I've seen the circles.
The circles. And that's kind of like the onion thing too, is like inward. But that is all to just say that this is one of those architectures that emerges under different names across all different like software languages and all different things. And it just kind of comes around again. And the funny thing about the hexagonal architecture is that's the word that I feel has somehow got stuck. It's more, you'll find it more than you will the onion architecture. But apparently the hex had nothing to do with hexagonal before. Apparently he chose a hex because that was what fit nicely. I should have written notes. Why did you make me wing this? I don't remember who it is, but the person who invented the or coined the term hexagonal architecture just chose hex because he thought, yeah, there's about three different ports on this side and three different things on that side. And that looks nice in a diagram. So it has no, the hex had nothing.
Alistair Cockburn.
Well, there you go. Cockburn. Yeah. Had no real significance. Now, since then, people have started to make up significance for it. Like that just kind of happens. So some people talk about, oh, it's like a honeycomb and they go together and it's about the fractal nature of this and how, you know, you compose a bunch of hexagons together like a hex map. Anyway, so there's stuff that has to deal with that, but let's talk about the actual definition of the architecture, because now I've gone too far without saying what the hell we're talking about.
Do you want me to give you the definition?
No, it's fine. I got it. The hexagonal architecture focuses on ports and adapters. The other name you might often find for this too is ports and adapters, because I think that's probably the strongest, most important part about the hexagonal architecture and is the beginning, I guess, of the other things that are like the onion architecture and whatnot. So ports and adapters. The adapter pattern is basically a sort of a known pattern where people, you have one system. I'm trying to be abstract, so sorry if it gets a little too abstract. Let me know if we need like examples. You have one system and you want to make it work with another system. So, for example, I've got I have bad examples in my head. I've got a thing that makes change for a computer. You give it money, an amount, and it'll and a cost, and it'll give you change. That's a terrible thing. And
this,
you want to make it
this
work.
The vending machine is amazing already.
It's terrible, yeah. And you want to make that work for a vending machine, but you also would, maybe it would be a good idea to make it work for a cash register, and maybe you also want to make it work for a
laundromat.
And so what you do is you have the one system stays the same, and its inputs and outputs stay the same, and the other system stays the same. And then you have an adapter that basically says, okay, well, these things don't speak the same language, so I'm going to change it. This is very much like the physical adapters you may see on like plugins and stuff, where it's like, oh, this is not the right current or power, so I have to just change it physically into something that matches whatever this other thing needs. Classic pattern in software, adapter pattern. Ports and adapters is basically that plus ports. What are ports then? So ports are, again, probably very logically, ports are basically you give your system defined interfaces. Now, when I say interfaces, I'm being really abstract, because you have to be really abstract when you talk about ports, because it very much depends on what you're building, what language you're using, what systems you're integrating with. But a port is basically my software has an interface that you interact with, and it's always going to be this way. And you can put whatever you want in there as long as you expect this interface. And so that could be something like, well, actually, I think maybe a good example is headphones. So headphone ports, do you call them ports? The little holes that you stick your like headphone jack into. Yeah. It doesn't matter who makes them, because they've designed those to all work exactly the same. They're all going to whatever. So you can make, Apple can make headphones and whatever can make headphones, and they're all going to work because they all expect that port to work the same. You can, as long as that jack goes in there and expects the right electricity in certain frequencies to come through, the headphone's going to work. And so in software, we have sort of the same thing.
I feel like half of our audience is now thinking they've never owned headphones with a cable on them.
Oh my gosh, you're right. I forgot how old I am. Well, suddenly I feel really tired.
Just
but to continue the analogy, I might say, I might, for example, on a port, say, I am going to store some data. I'm going to have a thing that says, like, or maybe this is just my data port of it all. I can call get function on whatever gets slotted in here. I can call a save function on whatever gets slotted in here. And that's probably all I need for now. And then you put in whatever you want. So you could have your, like, oh, the adapter goes in the port. So you can have your file adapter go in that port, or you could have your database adapter go in that port. And it doesn't matter. My system doesn't need to know what happens after this. I call save, and whether it's successful or not, it happens. I call read, and I get some data or some sort of error maybe. That's all I care about. And from my system inward, I don't care anymore. So the adapter is what goes in the port and handles it. And then you have, so that's ports and adapters. And then the hexagonal architecture is basically ports and adapters plus this idea of direction. So there's the driven part of your app and the driving part of your app. Yeah. So the driving part of your app in diagrams is usually on the left-hand side, would be something like, okay, well, this is your input. This is your interface to your application, whatever it does. It's so hard to speak so abstractly sometimes. But maybe if we were building a web app, this would be like, oh, well, you know, this is my web server where our application lives. And the interface to it is like HTTP requests. And so we're going to be driven by that. Maybe we have like, oh, well, anything that can make HTTP requests. Maybe that's a bad one because you don't have an adapter. But we just have something that's going to like call functions. And then you can be like, oh, well, you have something that'll call functions. Maybe I'll put that into a Lambda, or maybe I'll throw it in a node server, or maybe I'll, trigger events off of S3 and then it'll call your functions. And you're like, cool. Cause from my app, where my app ends and inward, it's just input to me, you know,
like a webhook.
Yeah. And so you got ports and that's driving it basically. And then there's the driven part, which is basically any systems that you need, or subsystems maybe not, that you need to interact with. And it's basically on the other side of the diagram. And so it would be like, well, maybe your database is on that side. It's being driven because the user is using its web interface to like make your app do stuff. And then we're, in our application, are using the database to save stuff. And that ends up being where the like fractal part of this comes, or the composition part of this comes, because technically anything I'm interacting with, all my little subsystems, could also be done in a hexagonal architecture or an onion architecture or whatever we're going to call this, ports and adapters. And I don't care because I have my ports and that's all I care about. And so it's about sort of judging the edges of your system. That's the ports and adapters.
So I guess to be like applicable.
Yeah.
Let's take this example of like, okay, I've got a webhook and it takes a call, a post from wherever, and yeah, it checks its signature ID and is valid and yada, yada, yada. So we're doing best practices where, and then I've got a database and I like throw in an SQS, like I've got all these things. Mm-hmm. Where do I like look up, like where does hexagonal help me in like organizing this all out? Like, is someone going to draw this for me? Am I supposed to draw this for me? Like,
yeah, you can draw it for yourself. But actually, we're not done, believe it or not. There's more to this. The ports and adapters are the major part. And then there's sort of like a secondary part, which is where the onion architecture sort of gets conflated with the hexagonal architecture. But let's talk about the ports and adapters first. So just from that, just from the ports and adapters, it's basically about building systems that do one thing well, right? They're like, hey, this is what I do. And the parts you want to separate out could be swappable. They could be editable easily. This helps in maintainability because it's like, oh, hey, if we change databases now, we don't want to use databases anymore. We don't want to use that database even. We want to use something else different. Oh, sure. You just change that. You don't have to change any of your core logic. You don't have to go into your files. You make a new adapter. If you were, let's say your application was something small in web terms, let's say it's TAN stack query, that's sort of an application that has to do with caching and stuff. And it has adapters to be like, oh, this is how you can use it to work with Svelte, and this is how you can use it to work with React, and this is how you use it to work. And so the core there, the like TanStack query part, doesn't change, but the adapters change, and they just, oh, a new framework gets popular, they add another adapter, and the core can stay the same. The core can sort of develop independently without worrying about it. As long as that interface to the adapter stays the same, that port, any of those like front-end frameworks can drive TanStack query. And then TanStack query also has this other port on the other side with the driven part, where it's like, okay, I need something to give me async data. And I think that's it. The TanStack query in my head, at least, that's where their driver ends. I'm going to call an async function. You give me whatever that async function is. And is the data it's returns is what I'm going to cache and what I'm going to manage with all my cache naming keys and stuff. Does that make sense? And then, so therefore you can be like, oh, well, we're going to make, you know, store API requests to store stuff, or we're going to directly in a database if you're using it there, or we're going to like store it to local storage. That side of it is all the adapters too, because TanStack query has this limited scope of what it does. And then it's just got ports on either side, the driven and the driving side.
Yeah. Like I'm in my head, I'm like trying to like the ports and adapters feel like interfaces and, yep, you know, scope, you know, we're using Unix principles to do one thing and do it well. And yep. So I hear like, basically I hear composition and yep. interfaces.
Yep.
And I'm exactly. still trying to figure out why I need a different name. Is it just a vocabulary thing? Like, okay. Why do I need a hexagonal name shape? Like, what makes this difference than
adapter? Well, this is okay, and there is more to get into now, but the ports and adapters pattern is important to understand because it gives you that a nomenclature, I guess, that wording that you can use to sort of understand each other and to sort of give yourself boundaries and rules. And that's pretty much it. That's like, yes, that's why, like I said earlier, it kind of just sprouts naturally. We are like moving from, we've got this layers thing, but it's not quite meeting our needs, but we're just trying to decouple stuff. We're just trying to move stuff around in a place that makes sense. And as you start to decouple stuff, you're like, well, these things need to work together, but I want them to grow individually. Well, we need to adapt. We need something, a little bit of code in between there to just like translate. And then this starts happening. And that's, and there could be, you know, and the driving and the driven side is just sort of a way to, it's like, oh yeah, I know what this interface should probably look like. And, you know, in this case, it's like the driven side is probably, you know, in JavaScript's terms, at least, driven side is probably functions that you call, and the driving side is, you know, you're going to call certain functions, and so you need their interface to match up with yours. Okay, but actually that leads to the next step. So I should actually get into the next step, because this is maybe important.
Okay, I'm ready for the next step.
Yeah, so the next step is sort of internal layers within the hexagon or the onion or whatever. So there's the outer layer. Oh, and now I'm going to get the naming wrong. The outer layer. Ooh.
Do you have it? The outer layer is adapters, yeah.
No, there's like a layer after that, isn't there?
Not that I know.
Now I got to look it up. Something before the application layer.
There's the application core the inside, and then the adapters and ports on the outside.
Yeah, so there's usually like more layers, I guess.
There's more layers?
Yeah, so this is where the onion architecture starts to overlap with the so there's the core, which is your app basically. And then there's maybe another layer around that which has ports and adapters. And so your core has ports and adapters. And then a layer around that which is like, "Oh, well, this is your like application, and it's going to like decide what actual framework, it's framework is the last one, what actual like databases we're going to connect to, or what adapters, you know, how we're going to get our input, whether it's from like a CLI or whether it's a web service or something. And then there's a layer around that which is like the framework layer, which is like, oh hey, this is what I get from, I don't even know, using C# or something like that. And the idea here is your imports can only go down. It can only go deeper into the core. So your core should depend on nothing, like should have imports, should import nothing, should have no dependencies, I guess, except that it will. And I have to get to that in a second, because that's confusing. And it confused me at first too.
It's a lot of exceptions here.
Yeah. It confused me until it was obvious, and then it was obvious. So I'll try and get to the obvious part quick. So your core can only depend on itself, has no dependencies. But then the stuff around it can import the core or your domain stuff. And then the layer around that can import from the application layer. And so that's how that side works. And then anything your core needs to either be dependency injected or service locator pattern. So it means you were going to, something's going to have to be given to your application on startup or whatever that says, okay, here's your missing pieces, now go kind of thing. So if you need a database, for example, the driven side, that should be the database interface will, the database adapter, sorry, will be dependency injected into your core, and all, and everything has to be like that. So the core has no dependencies. Everything must be dependency injected or service locator pattern into there. And then the application layer can import the core, but anything it needs from the outside, it has to dependency inject. And then again, the framework layer again needs to have anything it needs from the outside dependency injected, but then it can import stuff from the application layer. And that's it. And so it's not complicated. It sounds more complicated than it is. It's easier when it's visual, I think. And the main thing there is that you build these systems where you're nicely decoupled, and the dependency injection part of that happens, service locator part. I should maybe take a second to know
decoupled
what the difference
from
is those.
What
decoupled from
what other it systems
it, from what it's driving or sorry yeah from what it's driving so okay. It's subsystems might be a better way to say that, and okay. Then it also, and then the other side of that is you're going to have to, whatever's driving you is going to have to like call functions on you. So it's going to have to like, oh, I import you, so you're a dependency of me. So your driving side imports, let's say your core, because I don't want to go through all the layers, but your driving side imports your core and then calls functions on it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that way is one, and the driven way needs to be dependency injection. And that's why you kind of separate the two sides. And then the ports and adapters, like you said, is just sort of standard decoupling and interfaces. And that's it. You got the whole architecture in mind. And then you compose parts, compose hexes together to make your full real life application. And so this application is abstract because it applies to both, you know, anything from servers to like CLIs to like web stuff or JavaScript front ends, even maybe. So not a complicated mess, but this is where maybe the weakness of the hexagonal architecture or the onion architecture comes from, is because if you Google, oh, how should I implement the hexagonal architecture in JavaScript or blank or whatever language you want to use, you will get different answers because it's very open to interpretation because the rules are very simple.
Yeah. I'm looking at the, like before we hopped on, I started looking at the list of like, I was like hexagonal, like, and it seems to be not quite as obscure as, or like generalized as like the agile practices. But there is no, my takeaway this morning was, huh, okay. So there is no like concrete sample of like a hexagonal or onion-based architecture. It seems to just be like, here are some guiding principles. So is this an architectural pattern or just a general sort of category or methodology?
Yeah, maybe a method
that grows organically. That grows organically.
The thing is, it can be grown organically, or you could start with it. This is kind of the other software thing that will continually come up forever organically. Is do you, and you'll hear this fight on every issue in software. Do you do as little as possible first, and only do what you need to do when you need to do it, or do you have structure that you grow into where you start using it immediately, therefore you can scale further and grow into it and there's no trouble. And the, and
it's which camp do you fall in, Adam? Cause I know which camp I fall into.
Do you see, and this is the thing. I don't believe there's a good answer to this question because there's always trade-offs, right? It's the trade-offs are always there. So it goes back to the friggin' answer. It depends, which everyone hates.
Come on. You can do better than that.
No, I won't, because yep. I will say there are times early in a project where I will set up a lot of little infrastructure because I know this is, you know, or I feel this is going to get somewhere messy quickly. But I do sort of lean a little bit sometimes, depending that I'm like, well, maybe we really shouldn't do that. Maybe we should just do the minimum possible, get this working, and then push it out the door. And again, if you're a startup and you don't even know where you're going, probably just do that. Just do as little as possible, get your thing rolling, figure out what you need. And then at some point, you're going to go be like, hey, this code is awful and we can barely change things anymore, but we've got customers and we've got money rolling in. We should probably like, we should figure out the structure of this code at some point. And then you start making rules and start breaking pieces off and start whatever. So I can't give you a real, I can't give you a definitive yes or no. I can just say it depends. Depends on where you are.
I will give you a definitive yes or no.
I want to hear it. I want to hear your wrong opinion.
Oh, nice. You always
Always.
start with the bare minimum. As little as writing all of your React JS in a single file
Yeah.
until you need to break it out.
You disgust me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what drives me nuts is when I get into a project and there's like 87 component files for a new project. And it's like
Yeah.
everything is cut into like these little tiny components. And I'm just like, dude, what is happening in this
That's hilarious.
project?
I don't think 87 sounds unreasonable at all, which is hilarious. Like 87 components. Oh, that sounds normal.
Ugh, for
Where
like
do
two
you cut your
pages.
components? Yeah, that's funny.
Where do I cut them as large as humanly possible. Even to the
See,
point where
but then
like,
okay, and I get that. I actually, my brain wants to fall into that camp, but you have friction at every stage then, because you're like, okay, hey, we've got two components, one for each page. Okay, but this is shared across pages. We've got three components, one shared and
well,
two,
so
another one.
like as soon as you hit that friction point,
Yeah.
then you can carve it out. But this like
That's what I mean.
preemptive, like this idea that everything needs to be dry and don't ever repeat yourself is so
Right.
overdone.
Oh
Like,
yeah, but I think at least in the web community now we're getting past that, right? People are realizing, maybe not. If you're
are
not
we?
realizing that dry is a little too strict, dry is a little too strict. Repeat
Yeah.
yourself once, repeat yourself twice, then realize, hey, this is a pattern, and maybe break it off if it seems like it's really going to make sense.
Yeah. A
Just in
second
case that wasn't clear. I
time,
think that's pretty
not
clear.
enough. As soon as you need it a third time, now I feel like you've graduated to a component. And I would even say the same thing like when you're building out servers and like creating models and views and controllers. It's like I've seen like microcontroller like that do absolutely nothing but pass a lot. Like I just take this string and I just URL like I just encode it. And I was like, well, that's why did you pull that
Yeah,
out? Like,
exactly. But this is the eternal struggle, right? Because if you literally do as little as possible as you move on, that means every new thing that comes up is friction. It's like, okay, well, we need to rewrite parts of this because we
yeah,
need
but
this out. Oh, we need to.
for every project, the friction is always in a different place. Always.
Okay, what do you mean?
Like you say like if you blob it all into a single file, into a single like entity, like as let it grow until there's friction, depending on what your system is doing, that friction will often be in different places. You'll need to separate that logic differently. You'll need
Right.
to abstract that stuff differently.
Well,
And at
and
no
the
point have I ever guessed correctly
right.
twice.
Well, and like
Like,
and the worst part is it's going to go off whoever happens to pick up that task, you know what I mean? Like these decisions are just going to be made with the best
arbitrarily by
information at the time. Yeah,
either of
exactly.
us.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm going to have be like, "Oh, I want to do it this way." And later on you're going to come by and you'll be like, "Why
Oh,
didn't we
that's
do it
cool.
that way?" And I won't remember because it's like, "Well, I don't know, I was trying to do the little as possible." And you'll be like, "Well, let's change it this way." Okay, sure. So we change it your way, and then after a while we realize that was wrong and we're like, "Hey, you guys, you know what we need?" So I think starting from a place of like, "Hey, we have a little bit of structure." This is why people love frameworks, to be
Well,
perfectly
see,
honest.
I think there's a difference between a little bit of structure and guidance. You know, like I will happily jump into a Rails application where everything has a place and everything has a purpose. But that doesn't mean that everything has to be like abstracted into these like foundational
Right,
like.
but if you're it depends because a little bit and a lot is relative, right? So if you know that this is not just like a small app, you know that this is going to grow, you know that this is going to be a team of 20 by the end of the year, you might want to think early about like, yeah, we're going to get used to this structure that we're building so that we don't like as we add new people on, they're like, oh, we have new ideas. And every person comes in with their own kind of thing. It's good to have everybody kind of like, okay, this is how we do things. You know, this is where we put our code. Answering that question, like I've taken a task and I need to know where this code goes. That's enough that I would want some sort of structure, whether you want to call it an architect or want, but some sort of code structure that answers my question. Well, where does this code go? And when you have something like hexagonal architecture, presumably you go, okay, well, this is easy. I know this has to do with React, let's say. So it goes in the React adapter part. I know this has to do with our core domain business logic. So it goes in the core part. I know, you know what I mean? And you can sort of see like, oh, well, this is about saving stuff, but it's to like a specific database. Not like this is a feature that isn't going to be in all the databases. This is just like whatever. So I need to make sure that this is an adapter and not in our core.
Well,
our
so core needs to be abstract, like, right? Most of that structure is dependent on your stack. So like the React components are going to go in the React thing. Like, yeah, that's whatever framework or piece. Like if you open up that thing, then it's just a dirty sock mess of React garbage. Like someone's doing barrel files and someone's doing export imports, and like that's a mess. But like the hexagonal the technology choices I've made, like the front end pieces go here, the API pieces can't go here because they fundamentally don't work. It's like the reason that, if you're in a Next app, like Pages API have to go here. Like things have their general places. So I'm not against structure.
Yeah.
But like the over abstraction, like I don't think the hexagonal pattern is giving me any advice towards abstraction.
Yeah. And I would agree, because that's, I think, one of the major weaknesses of the hexagonal is that not that there's not enough rules, but it's so abstract that people can just make their own. And that inner part that's core, and then even if you like say, oh, but then there's the application layer and the framework layer, it's like, okay, but what does that mean? And so every person and their team basically has to decide, well, what happens inside that core? Like, what do we structure in that? Is it fractal? Or are we going to have little hexagonals in there and little adapters and stuff? Or are we going to like just, oh, no, this is, who cares what's inside that? It's the interface that matters on the
outside. What's that one pattern? Molecules, atoms, and...
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's just for UI, right? That's just for...
Is it?
Yeah, like molecules, atoms, layouts, and pages, or whatever it is. Did I get those right? Feel like that's right. Atomic
design. Yeah.
Atomic design.
Is that only for UI?
Yeah, because I don't think it makes sense. Like there's component-driven architecture, which is different, right? But I think that in particular is very tree hierarchical. Like it's like molecules, and then there's organisms, which are a composition of molecules, and then there's layouts, which is a composition of organisms and possibly molecules. And then
not going to lie, when I see a folder called organisms in my UI, I absolutely lose my mind.
I've never seen anybody actually name them that way.
Yeah.
It's always been like reusable components and something else. And
nope.
Compositions I've seen.
I've seen atoms and organisms. And I'm just like,
atoms I do see. Yeah. No,
you yeah, see. Yeah. 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 I'm just like, really? Like, this is what we're really? Okay.
So the hexagonal architecture in a nutshell, now that we've gone this far, it's a bit abstract. It's very abstract. It's too abstract because people sort of decide what it means for them, which is probably not enough of a pattern, but it's popular because it makes sense. You're like, yeah, you make some software. It has interfaces. It has outputs and these do stuff. And as long as I kind of just try and decouple stuff, I'm going to end up doing something like the hexagonal architecture. And then the inner layers of that usually comes from the fact that you're moving from a layered thing, which I think happens naturally as well. You move from a layer thing into this hexagonal and you're sort of just trying to define the boundaries. So you end up with those layers on the inside anyway. That's my opinion. I'd love to hear where I'm wrong. And if you are interested in a like front end focused, hey, this is how you build front end apps using the hexagonal architecture, let me know, because I have old talks that address this, and I hide them though, because I feel like a lot of people get iffy when you start talking about hexagonal and onion architecture. So I'm like, no, this is just layered too. It's just the front, middle, back. Everybody's familiar with MVP, MVC, MV, whatever. But actually I eventually get to the point where I'm like, no, but you need little adapters for different parts because you want them to be swappable. And then it becomes the hexagonal without knowing.
I was gonna say, is MVC and MVVC not supersets of hexagonals?
Well, and that has to do with how you implement them. So it depends on where your adapters are. So if you can go sideways across the layers, then it's probably not hexagonal. You have to be able to how to describe that in a way that doesn't require a
diagram.
Yeah. Basically, I'll sum up and just say yes if it's done well. Like if you have access points that you conform to and you actually then I would say yeah, a very well done, you know, MVC or MVP thing could qualify as hexagonal if it was done very well with like the interface is clearly defined and reusable and often used.
Well, certainly you and I would do it well, and certainly all of our listeners are going to do it well. Like I don't know anyone that's listening or on the show that's going to do it poorly.
Especially because we're going to do the minimum possible and grow into it doing well.
Yeah, I like to grow into it.
Do it well.
You're just going to find out as you go. It's exploratory.
That's like minimal possible reminds me of like Red Green Refactor, where you write a test that's like, hey, this is going to like calculate this. And you write it like, it'll be like, I'm going to give it 100 times the tax of this plus the engagement of this. And then your actual implementation is just a function that returns the answer. And you're like, hey, I got it.
Yay, passed. Red Green.
Next step. I'm like, yeah, you really want to do the minimal? Is that
I'm doing tests on math. She's like, that's not okay.
Yeah. But anyway, weird distraction that I just caught me out there. So I think that's probably good for us. Eh? Are we at our time?
Yeah. So that's hexagonal architecture. It's an interesting shape.
Yeah. And nothing to do with hex, which is very confusing.
But it looks like a stop sign.
Ports and adapters. Let's call
ports and adapters. It really, maybe it didn't get enough like a marketing love.
Yeah. I think hexagonal. When you have a bunch of hexes on anything, it looks pretty like when they all line up and they make
yeah, when it like honeycombs.
Yeah. Just it looks great, and then especially I don't know if you've seen that background where they move slightly, they kind of go shifting.
Oh,
I understand why hexagonal caught on and ports and adapters didn't, because everyone's like, ports and adapters, what's that?
Ports and adapters,
wah, wah, wah. Onions,
micro layers.
Onions might have caught on because Shrek caught on, and people just started to like Shrek all the slides.
No, they're like onions,
yeah,
cake. So, cake has layers.
In our episodes of Build It Better, we usually end by asking everyone involved a funny and hilarious question of would you rather? So, Jesse, without prompting and without preparation, give me a hilarious would you rather question that I'll answer.
Would you rather build for Android or build for iOS?
Why do you want to hurt me? I don't understand why you would do this to me. You're making me say this publicly?
Yeah, because I had to spend all day key signing for Android. So my answer is obviously not that.
Well, okay, but then you didn't spend the day key signing, getting all your key stuff sorted for Apple, because it's way worse.
Oh, it is. See, here's my problem. It's way worse, but I have sunk cost fallacy years of Apple signing. I know the hurdles, bullshit, and tribulation to get that done.
I feel like I'm choosing between two super mega cores that want to inflict damage on the world for profit and take control of my life in a way I don't understand. And I just feel like it's not a good choice. You know what I mean?
No, it's
like
not. But you have to pick one.
In a bad way. You're like, you don't
listen.
Get to...
You said it depends for the last like 39 minutes. So now you have to pick one.
I'm going to go with Apple because I have a Mac and an iPhone and an iPad. And if I'm going to develop, I don't have to buy a bunch of new stuff.
Although I do like buying new shiny toys.
I do like buying new stuff, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
True. But yeah, for solely that reason, as I don't have to buy new test devices, I would go develop for Apple or iOS or whatever we said. What was the question? Apple
Google,
stuff.
Google, right? Yeah, Google or, yeah. Google or Apple.
And you? Oh, you already said.
iOS.
Not Android.
Only because it's the devil iOS. I know. And yeah. And I don't have to like schlep through something that I don't know.
So if you'd like to hear awesome talking about architecture, coding patterns, software, please tune in again as we talk about that kind of stuff here on Build It Better. I don't know what the topic's going to be next week, but it's going to be awesome. Next week, next month. I don't even know when we deliver these. Who knows?
Every other
this
week.
Is me.
We're in your ear every other week.
Ugh. Why are we doing that to them? Yeah,
just maybe, get out of there. Maybe we're on your podcast.
It's very invasive. We're in their ears. It's just, it's a bad image. Bad, Jesse. Bad. All right. Thanks, folks. We'll see you
next time.